For a moment, I couldn't do anything but stand there gawking. There was another hole in the wall, where the loop guru must have crashed back into the hall, putting itself between the two groups of policemen, where they couldn't risk shooting at it without hitting one another. Or maybe they had. Some of the men who were down looked as though they had bullet wounds. And from the outside, over the sirens and the moans of the noise of the city night, I heard a long, furious howl. "You've got to be kidding me," I breathed. My limbs felt like bruised jelly, but I turned to limp back around the corner and found Rudy there, staring, a paper cup in one hand and the Snoopy doll in the other. I took both from him and stalked back into the hallway to the second hole the loop guru had made. I found what I was looking for at once. Blood on the inside of the hole of the wall where the beast had plowed through it. The loop guru's blood was thicker, darker than human fluids, and I scooped it into the paper cup before going back into the hallway. I swept clean a place with my foot, set down my blasting rod, got out my chalk, and drew a circle on the ground. Rudolph approached me, his head jerked back and forth between grisly corpses and splashes of blood.
My God, what are you doing?
I slapped the Snoopy down in the middle of the circle, then smeared the beast's blood over the eyes and mouth, over its ears and nose. Thaumaturgy, I said.
What?
Magic, I clarified grimly. Make a symbolic link between a little thing, I nodded at the Snoopy doll, and a big thing. Make it happen on a smaller scale, and it happens on a larger scale, too.
Magic, Rudolph echoed.
I glanced up at him. Go downstairs. Send the emergency people up here, Rudy. Go on. Send them up here to help the wounded. The kid twitched his eyes from the bloody Snoopy back to me and jerked his head in a nod, and he turned and fled down the hallway. I turned my attention back to the spell I was working. I had to keep the rage and anger I felt away from the working of my magic. I couldn't afford to let flood my spirit with grief, fury, and thoughts of vengeance for the dead men, for their deaths, for the pain that would be visited on their families. But as God is my witness, I wanted nothing more than to try to set that thing on fire and burn it somewhere outside. I tried to remind myself that it wasn't MacFin's fault. He was under a curse, and not to blame. Killing him wouldn't bring back any of the dead men in those bloody hallways, but I could keep any more men from dying tonight. And I could do that without killing him. In retrospect, it was just as well I didn't try to murder MacFin. Magic like that takes a lot of energy, certainly more than I had. I would probably have killed myself in the effort to finish off the loop guru. Not to mention that the council would have get their feathers ruffled by the concept, even though technically MacFin wasn't a human being at the moment. Killing monsters isn't nearly as much an issue with the council. They don't hold an equal opportunity mercy. Instead, as my vision started to fade, I began to chant nonsense syllables in a low musical refrain, focusing the energy I would need inside the circle I had closed around me. It wasn't until later that I realized I was babbling a chant of Ubriaca Uberus Ubrum to the Peanuts theme music. I tore off a strip of my own bloody jumpsuit and bounded across the Snoopy's eyes, its ears. I bound up the ends of its fuzzy, cute little paws, then mouth, as though muzzling it. I felt the spell grow, prepare itself, and when it was ready, I released the power and broke the circle, feeling it flow out into the night, following the blood back to the loop guru, winding itself about the creature, binding its eyes, fouling its ears, lashing around its jaws and forcing them shut, crippling its taloned paws. The spell would hamper and confuse the beast, hopefully drive it to ground where no one could disturb it, keep it from venting its rage upon the people of the city. It would last until dawn. The energy flowed out of me, left me feeling empty, exhausted, dizzy. And then people were all around me. Emergency folk in uniforms, cops and paramedics and firemen, and oh my. I stood up from my circle, grabbed my blasting rod, and shambled blindly.
I walked past Carmichael's corpse, stunned. Murphy was rocking back and forth over it, weeping, shaking, while a man tried to slide a blanket over her shoulders. She didn't notice me. Carmichael looked relaxed in death. I wondered for a minute if he had family, a wife who'd miss him. He died saving Murphy from the beast. He died a hero. It seemed so empty to me at that moment, meaningless to be a hero. I felt burned on the inside, as though the fire I had hurled at the creature had scoured away all the gentle feelings that had been there and left a fallow ground behind where only red emotions could flourish. I stumbled past Murphy and Carmichael and turned to walk out of the building, dimly realizing that in the confusion, I might actually have fair odds at making it back outside where Tara and Susan would be waiting in the car. No one tried to stop me. The stairs were tough, and for a minute I thought I might just lay down and die on the first landing. But a helpful old fireman lent me a hand down to the first floor, asking me several times if I needed a doctor. I assured him I was fine and prayed he didn't notice the handcuffs still dangling from either wrist. He didn't. He was wide around the eyes as everyone else, stunned. Outside was chaos. Police were struggling to establish some sort of order. I saw a couple of news vans rolling up the street while other people crowded around trying to see. I stood in the door, dismayed, trying to remember how to walk down the steps. Then someone warm and gentle was at my side, taking some of my weight. I let her have it and closed my eyes. I smelled Susan's hair when I inhaled, and it made me want to wail and hold on to her. I tried to explain what I'd seen, try to clean the stains from inside my head. All that came out was a little choking sound. I heard Susan speak to someone else, and then another person got on the other side of me, helped me down the stairs. Tara, I thought. I dimly remember them gliding me through a hectic area in front of the police station, around ambulances and shouting men, around policemen who were trying to get the bystanders to move away. I heard Susan explain to someone that I was drunk. Finally, there was quiet, and then we were moving amongst the cars in the parking lot, cool light gleaming on cool metal shapes, cool rain coming down on my head, my hair. I tilted my face up to feel the rain. Everything swam crazily. "I've got you, Harry," Susan murmured against my ear. "Just relax, I've got you. Just relax." And so I did.